Good morning. It's great to be here with all of you. A while back, I had mentioned to Sarah that it might be helpful to share a bit about myself since I've been in this role. And often when you hire a pastor, they go through an interview process and at least the search committee gets to hear this kind of stuff. But with the process that we took, we didn't go down that path. So now coming up on almost a year, you guys can learn a little bit about me. I remember a while back Elwood had shared when he visited some family on a trip and that kind of stuff, kind of giving context, his story, and how, and I heard several people saying, you know, that was helpful to hear. And I think, yeah, for me this morning, I want to share where I come from and how I ended up here and just to help you all get a better sense of who I am for with all of you. And how does that connect with unconventional outreach? I'm not exactly sure, but Sarah had faith, so we're going to go with it. I will obviously only be able to give you a glimpse into my life, but what I do hope is that if anything I share or allude to this morning brings questions to mind, I want you to feel comfortable asking me if you have questions. Transparency is important to me. If we can't be transparent and real with each other as part of the church, then I'm not sure we're giving each other, the church, or Christ enough credit. I also apologize in advance because I'll be mentioning numerous Mennonite entities, but unfortunately for the sake of time, I won't be able to explain all of what it means. So again, if you have questions, let me know. I grew up in Canton, Ohio, in Northeast Ohio with my parents and five siblings, two older and three younger. I attended Hartville Mennonite Church since I was born, and as had my mother, my father was a Church of the Brethren transplant. I was baptized at the age of 14. I never had a come to Jesus moment. It was just the natural next step. I did what was expected and followed the rules. My baptism and decision to follow Christ were genuine, but not unexpected. My home church in Ohio is the only other church I have been a member of. And growing up, I never imagined I'd be anywhere else but there. As a child, I was very anxious. There's typical anxiety when experiencing new things for many children, but my level was pretty much off the charts. I remember one time my mom calling into a radio show with a psychologist or child expert on the local Christian radio station, asking for advice of how to deal with this overly anxious and clingy child. I had two older siblings, and then when they were old enough to stay home with us, younger children, my mom tried to take advantage of that, but I would be literally so overcome with fear that I couldn't function. And I mentioned before in my last sermon that sometimes at night I would be shaking and my knees would be knocking together, and I would go to my mom and she would pray and ask God to take away the fear and whatever I was experiencing. And that was the God and presence of God that I was claiming in my baptism. As I got older, my anxiety centered more around my safety. I felt like I was vulnerable at any moment if I wasn't with someone I knew. I had a few places that I would go on my own because I knew once I was there, someone I knew would be there and I was safe. So going back to the verse in Isaiah, growing up, my favorite verse was Isaiah 40:31. But those who wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. It always felt a bit cliche because it's one of those verses that everyone knows and it can sometimes feel floofy and feel good. But I think for me, the verse resonated with me because the weight of anxiety was so heavy and the thought of flying like a bird or even not being weary or faint was something unimaginable for me. I don't think I could have necessarily named that at the time because in reality, at that point, I wasn't dealing with anxiety. It was because, in a sense, it hadn't been named yet, and it just was the only thing I knew. I graduated third in my high school class, but upon graduation, I hadn't visited a single college. I had no idea what I wanted to do. But as a young girl, I remember a man from our church returning home from after spending some time in Kenya and having this dream of going there someday. Like, my heart longed to go, but my body literally could not imagine it. Somehow, after graduation, I managed to sign up for Service Adventure. So I made the big move to Philippi, West Virginia in September of 1999. It was 3.5 hours from my home. But for me, it felt like it was around the world. And so maybe this was as close as I would get to Africa. As part of my volunteer assignment, I worked at a clinic in Philippi that was, we could literally look out our back door and see it. It was across the river that was just behind the house, up about 2 blocks and over 2 blocks and up one on a hill. I could leave the clinic on my bike and practically make it home without pedaling from the momentum coming down the hill. It should have been a lovely little walk or a simple bike ride, but the space between the clinic and the house was terrifying to me. I felt so vulnerable, like a sitting duck of being abducted or harmed in some way. And one day I left the clinic on my bike and I heard the train coming and it ran parallel to the river. So I quickly took off so I could get across the railroad tracks before the train came. As I was coming down the street, I realized that I probably wasn't going to make it to the tracks in time. So I slowed down just a bit. But in that same moment, I became so scared that if I stopped my bike that to wait for the train, that I was going to be so vulnerable that someone was definitely going to grab me. So in that split second, I changed my mind and pedaled quickly. As I approached the tracks, the train was right there. I remember the engineer leaning out the window and yelling at me. I don't know how close my back tire was, but I imagine it wasn't very far. As I crossed the tracks and was on the bridge, I wasn't even halfway across when all of a sudden I came to a complete stop. I couldn't pedal anymore. I looked down and my shoelace had become wound around the pedal that it completely immobilized the bike. In that moment, I realized I needed more help than just praying to God to be with me when I was scared. My anxiety had overcome my ability to think rationally. I put myself in real danger to avoid irrational fears. Fast forward to the end of my year with Service Adventure, and I returned home to Ohio and was officially diagnosed with anxiety and panic attacks. I was prescribed medication that I continue taking 21 years later. At Christmas that year, I went shopping by myself for the first time in my entire life. I was 20 years old, and I didn't have a plan to meet anybody or see anybody. I was going on my own. That January, I transferred to Heston College from a small college that I had been commuting to at home. A whole new world was opening up. After Heston, I signed up for a year of voluntary service. My year with Service Adventure had been difficult on many levels, and I didn't want that year to be the standard by which I judged service and mission experiences. So this time I headed to Sioux Falls, South Dakota. For my placement, I worked at Lutheran Social Services in their refugee resettlement office. I worked as a case manager and employment specialist. And many of the refugees arriving at that time were coming from Liberia and were the majority of my caseload that year. So this was obviously what God had in store for me. I didn't have to go to Africa. God brought Africa to me. I realize it's very simple and generalized, as Africa is not a single country, but for me, it felt like this unimaginable dream was becoming a bit of a reality. After my year of VS, I returned home, but at this point, I was getting a bit more of an itch to go and do something else. So for the following 2 summers, I was on staff with SWAP in Harlan, Kentucky, a place a few of you are familiar with. After 2 summers, my love for construction had grown with some basic knowledge. So the next logical step, Mennonite Disaster Service. So I served as a long-term volunteer for MDS for 1 year in Pass Christian and Mississippi and Mobile, Alabama after Hurricane Katrina. I worked on everything from pouring footers to roofing, minus electrical and plumbing, but drywall was where I spent a lot of my time. I learned that service was something I could do. For me, it was a way to show my faith through my actions. That was my hope, at least. I'd also grown in my love for traveling, and my anxiety had gotten under control, and I definitely still had moments of panic and anxiety, but through counseling, medication, trust in God, and being open about my struggles, made it so it wasn't as overwhelming. I eventually connected with Eastern Mennonite Missions in Pennsylvania and had several conversations with them, and they shared about a placement possibility in Gambia in West Africa. My first instinct was, of course, yes. But then I started thinking, what if I was just saying yes because I wanted to have my Africa experience? that I had dreamed of. It took me a bit to come to the realization that just because it was my dream, that it wasn't also a plan of God. Maybe the desire of my heart was put there by God, and I could do what I wanted while also following God. My home church had supported me through every service and mission opportunity I had experienced. And just shy of 2 years from my return from Gambia, I made the move to Harrisonburg to attend seminary. My plan was to go to seminary, get all the right answers, and go back overseas somewhere. I'm here, so we see how that went. I grew up in a faith context that was very black and white. When Irvin did his series last year on biblical interpretation here at Zion, that is not something I would have heard growing up. So when I had served in Gambia, the thought of sharing my faith was slightly overwhelming, thinking that I had to make sure that I didn't say anything wrong. What if I misled someone unintentionally? What if they asked a question about God or Jesus and I didn't know the answer? Because saying Jesus wasn't going to cut it. So I did what I knew how to do. I did things. I taught women how to sew, which I didn't really actually know myself. But sewing machine tensions and getting fabric lined up perfectly weren't salvation issues. So it was okay. Back to seminary. I was coming for the answers. I decided on EMS after a friend and I had come to visit, and she and her husband were also looking at attending seminary. On our trip home, she looked at me and said, "Lori, you're going to EMS. It's the right place for you. It's not the place for us." So it was settled. Once again, my home church was supportive of this venture, supporting me financially, and I even met with my pastor before I left. We sat in his office, and he told me not to rule out becoming a pastor. I'm pretty sure I laughed and said that would never happen. To say that my head and heart went spinning when I arrived at EMS would be an understatement. I was learning Greek and Hebrew. I was doing personal self-reflection work. I was digging into scriptures in ways that I didn't know were possible. I sat with classmates discussing passages of scripture and learning how they understood it and interpreted it and how it shaped their faith. We didn't always have the same experience reading particular passages. One thing might strike them and something else might have caught my attention. It didn't mean that God wasn't working through both experiences. And folks, this was kind of new to me. Some of you are probably thinking, of course, a little late to the game, aren't you? But my context for me was for it to be true, it had to be the same for everyone, because truth is truth, and if things are different, then how can they both be true? I was kind of freaking out at this point, because even though my home church was supporting me, there was still some pushback towards higher education, and even more so with some of the Mennonite institutions, because it was believed that some youth from our area had gone to EMU or Goshen and lost their faith. So initially in these moments, I was like, oh my word, this is happening just like they said it would. The problem was, I didn't feel like I was losing my faith. Instead, I felt like I was seeing and experiencing God in a whole new way. I don't want this to sound like you do you and I'll do me and anything goes. What I mean is that we're all uniquely created beings made in the image of God. We each have different ways in which we connect with God, in how we hear God, and how we experience God in Scripture. There is ultimately a truth, and that truth is Jesus. And we all need to claim that gift of truth and life for ourselves. But that doesn't mean we all find Jesus in the same way. For me, this was different and scary. I can see that without guidance and support and encouragement from other believers and people to walk along with you, that someone walking down this path can have it lead to a crisis of faith, because letting God out of this neat little box that we needed for a black and white world can be disorienting. This is why I believe in giving our children and youth the space to have honest and open conversations at church, at home, about God, about the world, about people, about pain, about anger, about joy, about themselves. I believe this, we run less of a risk of losing young people from our churches, because when they grow up, they will know how not to become lost or disoriented, because they have a foundation and trust in a God that is bigger than anything that they might encounter. I realize that all of this can be fleshed out and nuanced and so much more, but time. In the midst of growing and stretching experience for me in seminary, my home church was also going through a shift. It was something that was in the works for several years, but in 2015, my home congregation proposed to leave Ohio Conference and the Mennonite Church USA to seek another church affiliation. This decision was ultimately made in regards to the LGBTQ conversation that was happening in the larger Mennonite church. They were basically demanding that Ohio Conference and MCUSA take a stand declaring traditional marriage as the only way. I wrote the pastor a long email sharing my concerns with the way they were going about this proposal to leave. I didn't address the issue of homosexuality in my email. I shared my observations about this process as someone looking in from the outside the past couple of years. But I received no response. Radio silence. The same pastor who sat me down in his office and told me not to rule out being a pastor was now taking his congregation to join a denomination that did not allow women pastors or even women elders, of which my church actually already had. But all of that was okay because that denomination viewed marriage as only between a man and a woman. It didn't matter that they had stepped back in time in regards to women in leadership. That bridge was okay to burn. I was saddened by their decision to walk away from relationships. There were literally conversations that were happening within that my home church about wanting to leave all things Mennonite behind because they didn't want to be guilty by association. After a majority vote, they left the conference and MCUSA, renamed the church, and poof, they were no longer Mennonite. I would be lying if I said I wasn't hurt by the whole situation, and then I didn't cry numerous times. This was the church that had supported me when I served with Mennonite Mission Network, Mennonite Board of Missions, Mennonite Disaster Service, Eastern Mennonite Missions, and Eastern Mennonite Seminary. Those experiences had shaped who I had become, and my church walked away from it all. They were so convinced that this one issue trumped every other experience, relationship, and belief. How many of you have ever been in a relationship where you agree about everything? I can tell you that Joe and I do not see eye to eye on everything. But you know what? We love each other, and relationships are hard, but we're committed to each other and committed to doing the hard work. What I want to share next is not to speak poorly of anyone, but to give you a better understanding of myself and my experience. When we started here, Joe and I joined a small group here at Zion with several families, including Mike Metzler and his family. And as part of that small group, we each shared our personal stories, and I shared much of what I've shared with you all this morning. I shared about my hurt with my home church and how all of that went down, and how I get that churches or pastors are wanting to take a definitive stance on homosexuality, but there has to be a better way for this to happen, other than it's our way or the highway. There has to be space for people with different perspectives to have conversations and be church together. And that we can't let one issue be the ultimate issue in which there is no room for holding tension. And for me, it wasn't about a person or even a church naming that they believe in traditional marriage, because that's the understanding I grew up with. And honestly, when my home church made their move, I wasn't disagreeing on the belief. And I'm not willing to let, but I wasn't willing to let one thing define my faith and the church. And even now, I would say I'm on a journey with all things LGBTQ, and I'm comfortable knowing that I will err on the side of love and that I'm not God. So going back to when things came to a head here at Zion with Mike and his ultimate decision to leave because he felt morally obligated to present traditional marriage as the only option, I honestly was having a small case of PTSD. With my home church, there were 413 votes cast regarding the decision to leave Ohio Conference and MCUSA. 398 supported the departure. And I'm not sure if any of the 15 of us who voted against the leave remain at that church today. Some of them were willing to stay because it was their church, their community. But from what I've heard, most were asked in some not so subtle ways that it was probably best if they found another church that aligned more with their views. So now, here we were at Zion, faced with a similar situation. This decision wasn't about leaving the Mennonite church, but one that could ultimately cause great division and loss of relationships. The reason I'm standing here today and the reason I said yes to being a part of this pastoral team is because of all of you. I know for a fact that we do not all agree on homosexuality and even the other articles in the Confession of Faith in a Mennonite perspective. But you chose not to make a single issue superior to every other. You chose not to lose sight of the things you do agree on. You chose to remain knowing there would be hard work ahead, and maybe without realizing it, you chose unconventional outreach, modeling church even when it's even in its messiness. To me, a person wounded by the church, reminding me that God is still moving among us and that hope and trust are things I can still find in church today. I think historically, when we think of outreach and missions, we imagine reaching unchurched, unreached peoples around the world. But I think maybe when we think about unconventional outreach, we need to realize that many folks we encounter have a faith background, and maybe they just need reintroduced to God, Jesus, or maybe just organized religion in a loving and safe way. Thank you.